It was really electrifying. It was like, I understand now the real connection, the bond between audience and actor. And so for me, that gives me such an extraordinary energy. I come off and I'm just on a high, you know, for a few hours. And my partner said to me, he's like, I've never seen, that's when I see you at your most strong, like you come off and you're in the room and you're just sort of glowing energy. And I think it's about the physical connection with the whole audience and with people, and that's some weird energy that's flowing in that room.
Filmmaker Magazine presents Back to One with Peter Rinaldi.
Ruth Wilson is an actor. She sat down with me in cyberspace to talk about the work.
It's very odd what we do. I mean, I think that we're like translators of material. We do create, but we're given, often given, source material to work from. So we're there to translate to an audience what that writer or that director is looking for. So we're kind of like in between. We're the sort of, it translates through us. And there's something very odd about the ability to, the act of imagination being so strong that you can believe in a moment so truthfully. And I think that psychology or something in the brain, there's some ability for actors to do that. And it is very odd because, for me, it takes an awful lot of focus to believe. But that is what we're doing. We're living on a different plane of reality. And it's really quite an odd thing that we do.
Did you ever, or did you ever see anyone getting in their own way?
Yes, yeah. And it's fear. I think what happens is, I think most actors are shit scared. I am, usually. And the process you do to... I think the idea of being watched is really, I don't like it. I never, when I was a kid, I didn't like being center of attention. It was weird, or I had a weird relationship with it. Like at school, if I was asked a question, I would go bright red. I blushed a lot and got embarrassed quite quickly. And I always felt I needed to know all the answers in order to answer something properly. So I didn't like being caught on the hoof, or, I couldn't blag my way out, basically. Mm-hmm. There were people that could, were much better at sort of just bullshitting and getting away with it. So I've always found acting a bit the same, like I can't blag my way out of it. I have to do a lot of work or feel like I'm on top of and inside that character or the journey of that character to be able to convincingly portray that character. I couldn't just turn up on day one and bullshit my way through. And I don't think many actors can, because it feels so exposing. I think it's really very vulnerable, making the idea of being someone else or even being looked at that intensely is pretty weird. And especially by a camera, because it's so mm-hmm. close. Stage is slightly different. But so I think that people get in the way of themselves, or it's about not allowing themselves to be, and that's because they're scared and because they're very vulnerable. And so often they end up putting more masks on to kind of deal with that fear, I think. And anxiety, it comes to anxiety, and there's a sort of way of being able to, I think as you go on through your career, try and live with that anxiety. It's always going to be there, and you sort of live with it and accept it, and then sort of learn to, that's part of just the process, I think. It's weird. It takes so much focus or belief to be in a space, and it's probably not always the same for every actor, but certainly for me, it's like to be holding that space and that imagination and that world for so many people, in a way, to feeling like you're kind of creating that world, is takes some like such pressure or such focus. And it's, you drop out of focus, it's quite easy to drop out. And then you're like, oh my God, where am I? Oh God, I'm being looked at. I'm just like Ruth Wilson in a dress. you know, get me out of here. So I don't know. I think people, lots of performers are different, and that's how I sort of approach it. But I love the challenge of it. I've always sort of, the beauty of doing what we do is so extraordinary, and to live, I mean, even now more than ever, to live in a different world and to dip into different worlds and sort of take on kind of ghosts of other worlds and lives is really extraordinary.
Do you have a typical first step you take in that preparation process that you feel like you have to go down?
It used to be, I have these workbooks. So I it's almost like come from school again, probably, that I sort of have a process of writing things I can visualize and understanding, really in quite a sort of, I suppose, academic way in some way, the journey of a character. But the workbooks can be filled with pictures and images, but they're about what the journey of the character goes through. So it's quite, for me, it is quite structured in that way. I feel like I want to have hold on the whole. I've tried to challenge myself in that, actually. I've let go of doing it so much. And as I've got older and more experienced, I don't do them so much. And I'm trying to not. I'm trying to experience something, you know, trying not to do it with that process. And sometimes I haven't had the time to. So you just sort of get thrown straight into the middle. And actually sometimes they're the most thrilling of experiences and best outcomes because they're not so prepped. That makes me feel sort of like to have a hold of the kind of structure in a way of the character or the sort of journey she goes on. And then to sort of really try and understand the psychology of how a character gets from here to there to there and what's going through and what the conflict inside her is all the time.
How does that not get overwhelming? You know, like all that material that you need, that you're carrying around, that you're bringing even to the set?
Because it gives me a sort of freedom. Once I know, if I feel like I don't even know what the scene is or I haven't prepped and thought about it, sometimes that gives freedom, but sometimes it's like you sort of feel a bit exposed because you're sort of just haven't got your head around anything. I think what it does for me is it allows me to have something I can hold on to in moments that I feel a little bit exposed or don't know. It doesn't restrict, it doesn't set me in a pattern of the way I'm going to do something, but it gives me something that I can sort of stake in the ground as the thing that sort of central focus of this character that you can come back to if you need to. So I think that's really useful to me to have a sort of wide understanding of the world, of the time. And I love that anyway. I was a history student, so I love the study of people and places and time. So for me, that just gives me, you know, it's something I quite enjoy doing. And then on the day, you let go of most of that stuff anyway. It's just something to ground you, to remind you, to bring you back to focus when you need. That's what I do anyway.
And Mrs. Wilson, watching that, I'm trying to figure out, like, how are you giving me so much of what you're giving me as an audience member without saying anything? And I would rewind things. I'm like, well, how is she, or is what I'm getting right now, does she know she's giving it to me? You know, like, and it's like all of this. And then I heard a quote from you in an interview, and it got me thinking about it and thinking maybe this is part of the secret here. You were talking about the immediate and intimate moment of every thought process that your character is having and how you know it's being read by the camera. And you were saying how you have to be clear. And then you said it's almost meditative. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay, so now, can you talk about that, though? I know that might be hard to talk about. But is this almost like a trance state? Is that going too far?
No, I think also the camera is quite an odd beast because it does something to you when it's close up. You know, you have this suddenly very odd connection with the camera, which is like magnets, I suppose. It's sort of like a pulse. And when it's further away, not so much, but when it comes in, you sort of feel the energy of it. And I do think, you know, one of my teachers said to me when I was at drama school, she said, the camera reads all your thoughts. So even if you're thinking about Weetabix, it will look like you're thinking, but it, you know, they won't say, oh, it's Weetabix she's thinking about, but they'll be like, and I remember when I did Jane Eyre, it was my first big job. And I was so scared that I would literally practice at home by listening. I'd record all the other people speaking in the scenes, and then I would leave gaps for me. Wow. And I would practice my thoughts. Like, what it's about, it's actually about listening. It's about listening more than anything else. It's about listening to really what's being said and hearing properly. And it's really hard to hear. It's really hard to listen. It's a very difficult skill, and to truly listen and to respond. And usually actors are so just listening for the cue,
mm-hmm.
or listening, you know, waiting for someone's mouth to stop moving or whatever it is, or thinking about the line they've got to say. Whereas if you're truly listening, then it should be an easy response, and your reactions will be sort of honest in a way. So I think it's about training yourself to listen, but that's really hard. And it is slightly meditative, because it's incredibly focused and like you say, it goes into a sort of Zen place. And certainly those times on set when it does feel incredibly connected and electric, and energy is sort of, it's palpable, I feel. And that's when it's really exciting, because then you know if you could do, and that's the chemistry between you and the other actor, but the chemistry between you and the camera too, but you could do one thing with another actor and they'll be responding to you. And that's what you look for me. It's what I look for as an actor, is to have those moments that feel so electric and alive and organic. And I think that comes from sort of pure listening, really. But to be honest, thinking back to Jane Eyre, I can't remember much about it, because I hadn't had much camera training, and I did do a bit of, well, I just looked at myself in the mirror and would be doing listening and talking to myself. So I'd be seeing how little you could get away with. I was so sort of in the zone and nervous that I probably over prepped it. I could never do that performance the same way now. And I think for my first performance, a great performance, but I wouldn't be able to do it again the same way, because I was a different person then, and also different sort of attitude to the work. And that was the first, every first take I blushed because the camera's on me. And I used it sometimes. It worked really well as a character. But that was me blushing. That wasn't Jane Eyre. That was me just going, oh, I'm being watched. I can't bear it. that tension. But it's so funny, because how much you try to be someone else or be so much in the moment, your essence always comes through, or bits of your essence come through. And that's what make you truly unique. And that's what people either respond to or don't. But like, it's... So I think there's always a tension, whether it's your within the character itself or it's you, there's a tension. And I've been done parts before where I've just thought, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Sorry for the swearing, but I don't know what I'm doing in this. And this is going to be a disaster. And I feel really at sea. And I've seen the end performance. I'm like, that's so much better than I thought it was going to be. Another one when I've gone, that is terrible. And I thought I was really on top of it. So you can't, you can't judge yourself, which is very strange. And sometimes, you know, and things that feel disconnected often look great or work out wonderful. So it's really strange. That's an eternal mystery. And that's why it keeps us all probably hurt, you know?
Yes. It's so weird how we love, as I'm speaking as an audience member, how we love at sea, like, you know, you, somebody being at sea, and then everyone thinks, oh my God, I've ruined it. And we're like, no, you know, because when you have it straight and have it locked and have it, I turn it off. That is precision acting. I couldn't be more bored with it, you know?
Exactly. And I think it's funny, you live your life trying to get rid of all those anxieties or feeling that other stuff of you, you know, you're like, I'm trying to be someone else. And actually that's the stuff that's the most interesting. And the conflict between the two is what's most interesting to see. And as I said, the camera reads everything. So when you're at a loss, that's actually quite interesting to watch, even though it's horrible to go through. So I it's all about, I think actors, you know, like I said, it's lots of fear, and people try to control their fear in different ways. And you're always trying to attain like perfect Zen. It's never going to happen. And actually the point probably is to accept that it's not and be at peace with the anxiety, because actually it can create magic.
Two things you said about the stage that I want to ask you about. You said you need to go back to the stage every few years for my body. And I wanted to know what that, I can imagine what that means. Of course, you're free on the stage. You don't have to be in a frame. It's just you and your body up there. But I think you meant it in another way, or there's something, it's almost like a refueling.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
I think theatre for me, it's one of my most powerful, when I, as an individual, as a person, as a woman, as a anything, because can you imagine, on screen you have a connection with a camera and the crew and the actors, if you're lucky, but in a theatre you have that connection with however many people are watching, which can be up to like 600, 800 people, whatever, 1,000 people. And the magic of theatre, which I think is extraordinary, is that you are asking, everyone is participating in the act of make-believe, and they are all investing energy into imagination and believing what's on the stage. And that's an incredible energy. It's kind of extraordinary. The one time I really recognized this and realized it, I was doing Hedda Gabler a few years ago at the National Theatre. And during the last 5 minutes, it's quite a dramatic end of the show. In the last 5 minutes before that happened, someone called for a doctor in the auditorium. And I was on my, I was on my hands and knees. I was covered in sort of what looked like blood. I was like building up to my finale, and you've got the audience have been with you throughout the whole of this.
Yeah.
And we had to sort of stop the show. And
oh God.
I was like, no, let's carry on. I was like,
it's almost forward. Over.
Yeah. I was refusing to move. I was like, let's just get the person. They're fine. They're fine. They've just fainted. Just get them out and we can carry on. But they obviously, we had to go off, and the person was fine. That was all good. But we came back on to finish the last 5 minutes.
No.
I was like, okay, we're going to go back just to the point at which you throw me to the floor, and then we'll just have to try and get them back. And it is like trying to get them back. It's trying to get them in as putty in your hands so that you are together. And there's that, again, magnetic connection between audience and actors. You can tell a story. And we got them back. They wanted to be back. They were desperate for us to complete it. And we were desperate for them to join us in that final 5 minutes. And, we got a massive standing ovation. And it was really electrifying. It was like, I understand now the real connection, the bond between audience and actor. And so for me, that gives me such an extraordinary energy. I come off and I'm just on a high, for a few hours. And my partner said to me, he's like, I've never seen, that's when I see you at your most strong, like you come off and you're in the room and you're just sort of glowing energy.
Wow.
And I think it's about the physical connection with the whole audience and with people, and that's some weird energy that's flowing in that room. If it's good, we've also been in shows where it's not that and it's terrible. If you're in a bad show and audience numbers are diminishing, and that's just the worst feeling, you're just throwing energy out there and it's exhausting and you don't get anything back. And that's just sapping of energy. But when you're given so much by an audience, it's quite an extraordinary feeling. Yeah, it reignites me. And it also makes me braver in decisions I make in film after that, or TV.
Mm. So you like carry it over. You carry that energy over.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just like the, bolder choices and sort of a confidence and a bold choice, an energy that comes from the stage.
That was the other thing I wanted to ask you about, which was about the audience. Cause you said, if it's raining, the audience is going to be changed and my performance will be different.
Yeah. There was, so I did a play called Anna Christie, which is a Eugene O'Neill play. And I did it at the Donmar Warehouse with Jude Law and a few others. But that was, and I remember during that play, it's a tiny theatre. It hosts like 250 people. And it's a beautiful little theatre. You're literally pretty much on the front row as an audience, as an actor. You're sitting on the front row. And it's so close and intimate. And I remember, it's funny, other actors had loads of sort of rituals they do before going on stage every day. And I decided during this show, I'm not going to do any ritual. If I start finding myself doing a ritual, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to go and take what comes from the audience each night. Because I had to walk on like 15 minutes into the show and do a sort of entrance. And I just thought, I'm just going to take the energy, just see what happens. Just go out there and see what happens. And every night is different. And, you know, like I say, if it's raining, people come in and their energy is different. If it's sunny and hot outside, again, it's different. So it all depends if you've had a bad day, if you've had to rush in, if, you know, there's so many different things that affect the energy of the night. And sometimes matinees, you sort of like, oh God, loads of, usually it's full of like older people. So you're thinking that half of them are going to be asleep or, but actually, but what's really interesting, the night, often I find the evening of matinee performances are really good because you're sort of warmed up, you're energized, you're in the zone anyway. I did Constellations on Broadway and we did it with Jake Gyllenhaal. And there was we decided the last month of performances, we'd do an extra performance. It's only an hour long as a show. So we were going to do an extra performance for $30 under 30. So it was for young people basically. And it was electrifying because we would be doing the show at, I think, 9 p.m. or even 10 p.m. It's an hour long. And we'd already done one show. So we'd done one show, come off, have an hour break and go back on again. And it was electrifying. And they're all a bit drunk. And, you know, and so they were energized. And they were the best shows. They were so fun. So, yeah, it all depends on your audience as well. That's what I mean, that there is a magic connection. And that's, you know, why it's such a tragedy at the moment that no one can be in these theatre spaces. But I also think it will be, it's an art form that's existed for a very long time for a very good reason. And I don't think it will disappear. I actually think it will sort of come back in a different and stronger way. It will have to.
You don't just play an evil person in his Dark Materials. You play the mother of all evil. But somehow you can't be caught curling your whiskers, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, but yet you're still sinister enough for it to be fun and grounded in reality, and we're kind of scared of you. But so how do you balance that?
Yeah, it's quite interesting building that character because, look, it's fantasy. So I was always like, we can push the edges a bit of reality. I mean, that's the joy of it. And even in the books, they are a bit, I mean, the character's so fascinating, and Philip never gave any real answers as to her psychology, but he gave lots of questions, which is the best thing for an actor. It's like, wow, there's loads of unanswered questions. That's really interesting to me. Or there's loads of things that don't make sense. That's really interesting to me. So I have to dig into a sort of vague logic myself, or go on a sort of search of who this woman is. But I knew that there's loads of fun to be had with her too. And it is for kids too. And you don't want to sort of go too sort of, you want a bit of lightness to it as well. So it was a constant balancing act of all those different things. But what I had to do is ground her in her own truth and psychology for me. And I won't ever expose what that is because it's not something that Philip's ever sort of said. And I wouldn't pretend to know or try and decide what his version of her is. But my version of her I had to put a sort of ground in my own reality, an understanding of why she is who she is and why she does that such horrific things and how she's become the woman she's become and why she has a monkey that doesn't speak and doesn't have a name. And that is part of herself. And so there was, it was a really interesting sort of journey of discovery with her. And so it was about pulling it back. And I think that someone like that character, in order, so she's not a two-dimensional baddie. You have to keep finding the psychological truth to her. And there's so many things that conflict with her. You know, there's the fact that she has abandoned her daughter and now she's becoming a mother that she, or, you know, she's, it's been thrust upon her in a way and she's totally unable to deal with it. And even though she thought she could, that, you know, she's always managed her life through a form of control, and then suddenly things are falling apart and her daughter's exposing that. That, and in season two, we really started digging more deeply into that character. But I think for me, it's always about finding some sort of version of psychological truth by which, even if you don't have to explain it, you can, it can just focus again, why this, how she acts in certain scenes. And we had, you know, I had this monkey. So what's great, I don't know if you know the show, but
I do. Yes.
Yeah. So things called demons, by which they are basically a animal version of your soul, and they are with you the whole time. And they're sort of in very close proximity to you this whole time. And they are, have a name and they speak and all sorts. So they're kind of, you know, they're part of you, they're part of your soul. And what was so fascinating to me again about this character was that she had this part of her soul that didn't, she didn't name and she silenced. So that meant a part of herself that she deeply loathed or wanted to silence or was ashamed of and dismissed or kept quiet. So that for me was fascinating. I was like, okay, I need to dig into what that is. And then as the show goes on, that's gonna reveal itself. So she, and she has to be around herself, her monkey, all the time. So she has to face what she hates all the time. And so I was like, they hate each other. You know, she can't bear to be with her monkey because she can't bear to be with herself. So that for me was like, oh, amazing. I have a constant conflict. Even when I'm walking down a corridor, there's something at my feet I hate, you know? So it's like, it was really lovely to have an acting partner that was representing yourself. And it made it so much more interesting and complex each scene that I approached. And we had these puppeteers, and I always mention him because honestly, it was the way that I approached this character was totally physical. In a psychological way, but it was like, I need to do it through the monkey because that's how you understand who she is. Yeah. So I got together with Brian, who's Brian Fisher, who puppeteers the monkey. And we did like a week workshop before we started filming. And it was just me and him. And I was like, right, I want some monkey moves. But also let's play with the idea, you might do in drama school, but you know, like also what you do in theater and stuff. It's like, let's play physically with the two of us, kind of working around each other, being very in close proximity, and then pulling away from each other and what that energy string feels like. And then talking about the psychology. And so we came up with a sort of set of rules by which these two coexist. And every time we do a scene, I'm like, okay, so Brian, where do we reckon what's going on with monkey now? Or are they aligned here? Are they sort of manipulating the room together? Whoa. Or are they at odds with each other? So to me, it was like that creates another level that's just brings more detail into what I do in every scene, because there's someone, you know, there's another part of the, her psychology that's being accessed through a different, you know, through a physicality, through an animal. I love, that's why I love playing that character. Actually, it's infinitely interesting.
It's amazing though, that they gave you the freedom, the creatives or the, you know, the creators of the show gave you the freedom to do this kind of work and to have that, that monkey, because if people don't know, there's amazing CGI that happens after this, you know, the puppeteers do their thing, but then they CGI it. So I was always thinking, how are they playing, until I learned this, I was saying, how are they playing off of nothing here? Cause it seems so amazing. When I heard about the puppeteers, and now I just heard this now, And so it's gone even beyond just having something there that you can play off of. It's actually helping your performance so much psychologically.
Yeah, for me, definitely. I mean, I think that, you know, Mrs. Coulter is different to some of the other characters because the monkey is so much part of her, like that they come together and they're so, they make such an impression, and the monkey's so vicious and violent in it. And it's such a contrast to every other demon in the piece in a way.
Yes.
That was a way of expressing what these demons mean, I suppose. I love when I do the research. Why I do all my research before is because often you have a moment of enlightenment or whatever, which it's the light bulb moment of what is going to be your stake as the character.
Mm.
And how you can sort of put that in and then everything else can swirl around. And my monkey was this, I was like, right, I'm going to have to focus on the monkey. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we did that, all credit to Jane Tranter and Dan McCulloch and everyone on his Dot Materials team, because we were creating this thing from scratch and no one really knew how to do it or what was going to work best. And thank God we did get puppeteers in, because I would not have had that performance or that relationship or that detail of sort of psychology of the character without Brian and without then Russell Dodgson, who also runs Frame Store, who then draw all the animals. He also started, after he started seeing the rushes, he's like, right, I want you to come in and talk to all the Frame Store animators about the psychology of what's going on. And that never happens, because it's always just we draw it afterwards. But he's like, if you could talk to them about that psychology, then they'll be able to understand how to animate the monkey in a way that's more expressive and links to what you're doing. So that we can have enhanced what you're doing rather than sort of pull away from it. So it was a wonderful collaboration between all these different, very creative people to sort of, you know, put something quite unique on the screen that sort of made, you know, was really exciting to do. So that's why I've had such a wonderful time on it, because I was given creative freedom to go there. And that was really fun to be part of.
You just wrapped a film called True Things. This is you're the first actor I'm talking to that has finished a film during this insane time.
This is a film that I produced as well. And I have been producing this movie for like many years in development. And it finally was going to be shot from March. And then it got shut down by, typical. And we also had a director, a female director, who also wrote it, who was pregnant. And in the interim, she gave birth. So we went back. We had many COVID concerns because we had to go. We wanted to go back. We had only 5 weeks left of shooting to do. But we had a baby in tow if we were going to go back. And we also had someone who was playing my grandmother in it, who was in her, you know, 80s. But the director was like, she desperate to go back, was very, we had help for her. And it was the most, actually, incredible set. We had the best crew, and the energy on the set was like, well, you know, this is our second chance to finish this. Let's just do as much as we can, see what happens, be zen about the fact it might get closed down again, but let's just go for it. And it was with a female DP, a 6-week-old baby on set who was being breastfed during takes. And it was really glorious, actually. And we ended up in Spain. So we finished in Spain 2 weeks ago. And that was a concern too, because the numbers were starting to go up in Spain, although they weren't as bad as they are now. But we just managed to finish it in time before it's really kicked off. But everyone on set is, you know, I'm about to shoot something out in Prague now, but we've all just been quarantined because four cast members have been tested positive.
Oh God.
And that we haven't started shooting yet. So it's such a weird time, because I was thinking there's such a demand for content at the moment with these streamers and because people are at home bored, but it's very hard to make the content at the moment. And I think that everyone is finding all productions are halting, and it's a much slower process. But yeah, it is a concern. And I think it's really hard to maintain sets. We did all right. We did all right on ours, but it is difficult to maintain. We're getting tested every day on this, and yet people are still getting positive. So it's difficult. It's really difficult. But, you know, the industry is so determined to keep making, and which is great. So I just hope it all, I don't know, smooths out soon. But I've got a feeling it's going to be a bit like this for a while.
When you're not working at all, what do you do to feed, you know, your inner artist or your inner actor?
I get inspiration from other artists. So I usually, off the back of a film or, you know, a job that I've done, I will usually have a sort of, you know, rest for a few weeks. And I'll feel absolutely exhausted, that there's no energy to do anything or think about anything. And then you start to feel your energy come back, and I need to be inspired. So I go to art galleries, or I go to theatre, or I go and watch films, or I go to a music gig or something. So that's why I love living in cities, because there's so much around you to see. And that does spark my interest again, you know, looking at great art. I love going to art galleries. And that just sparks your interest, or your just amazement at what people have done over the years, you know. So that really helps me get back in a way, or like reinvigorate my brain again.
Ruth Wilson, thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Chapter 1 is a production of Filmmaker Magazine, which is a publication of IFP, the Independent Filmmaker Project. Listen to back episodes of this podcast at filmmakermagazine.com or wherever you get your podcasts.